Welcome to Focus on the Community, a weekly program that focuses on issues and events in our community.
Well, hello, happy weekend, and welcome to another Focus on Community. Frank Rush along with you. By the way, if you missed any part of today's show, don't forget you can always head over to our website and look for it. It'll be posted there for you as a podcast. You can download it or stream it anytime you like. Our guest today is Indiana State Senator John Ford, who's most of your district, covers all of our listing area. How big is your district for folks who aren't real sure?
It's all of Vigo County and the northern half of Clay County.
Okay. We've got a whole new session coming up in the state legislature. Obviously, you being a Republican and being as how the Republicans have a supermajority, I doubt there's anything that's got you real worried.
Well, I think, you know, just how we have session has got a lot of concern about that. You know, how will we take public testimony? How will we have session? You know, I did find out my spot in the chamber has been moved to the balcony. So I'm up in the cheap seats and it'll be a little different. So the whole format of how we do session is going to be changed.
Yeah, because you guys are supposed to be all distance and spread out now, and the chamber was never really designed for what you've got to deal with now.
Exactly. I mean, it wasn't for that. Our offices, our cubicles are pretty packed pretty tight. We also, you know, are open to the public. And, you know, for me, a large part of this is hearing from the public. So people coming into the state house, and we'll see how that goes, but there's going to be some limitations on that too.
What committees are you on, and what parts are you kind of really interested and focused on?
Yeah, so right now I'm on the appropriations, so we'll do the state budget there, public policy, child and family services. You know, that's one I spend a lot of time on. I'm chair of the election committee this year, and then I'm on the judiciary committee.
Well, you're going to have a very busy year then, it looks like.
Yeah, lots of issues and lots of, you know, I like to dive deep into issues, so these committees allow me to do that. On the budget, on the appropriations committee, I'm sub-chair of the higher education committee. So I've been working on that funding formula most of the summer.
Talk about the budget. I mean, Indiana has been quite blessed, especially when you compare us to our neighbors to the west, to have maybe not endless supplies of cash, but we're doing all right. I mean, the state has always been in a pretty good financial situation. The pandemic, though, has kind of messed up our budget the same as it has everybody else. How good or bad a shape is Indiana in?
Yeah, I mean, certainly, you know, at the peak of this pandemic, you know, when we shut things down, you know, we had a revenue loss in May of $1 billion. And, you know, we've been pushing to come back from that. And I think October, we met what we had projected for October of 2020 to be. So that's a good sign. So, you know, thinking that we're going to go into session, we'll be a little short overall from a revenue standpoint. But yeah, we are blessed here in Indiana that with our strong fiscal policies of the last few years, we have some cash reserves. We still have lots of businesses looking to Indiana. You may have seen last week Elanco move their North American headquarters to Indianapolis.
Of which they've got a couple of facilities already here in our area. They've got one in Vermilion County, I know, and another one in Terre Haute.
Yeah, so the hope is that will be good news down the road for our region, and hopefully we can attract Elanco to expand here.
When you talk about the state budget and money, everybody wants a piece of the pie. I don't think you've ever had anybody go to the state house and say, you know what, we got a little too much. Why don't you just keep some of it? I don't think I've ever heard that happen. But you've got lots of groups that are coming to you guys, and they're wanting a bigger share of the pie. So teachers, for one, are wanting some. I know there's other groups out there. So how's that going to play out this year?
Well, I mean, just trying to be honest with people, our pie is not as big as it's been in the past. And, you know, we'll really see what the revenue numbers come back. You know, probably the end of December numbers will be very important. But, you know, we are coming into a period right now with this third wave where things are slowing down a little bit. So we're not out of the woods yet from a revenue standpoint, but we're going to do our best. You know, we've made some commitments on the education side to fund e-learning at 100%. So that will be, you know, there'll be some cost to that. You know, this current budget that we're in, the last 2 years, we've increased education funding by $1.4 billion in the last budget. I don't think we'll hit that number this budget, but I think we'll have an increase in education funding again, because we know, you know, especially when it comes to e-learning, that schools are taxed. There's expenses that they're having to do from an equipment standpoint and technology standpoint that they were not expecting.
When we talk about the e-learning, is that the only place where the money is going in education? I mean, teachers obviously had a couple of big rallies the past couple of sessions at the State House. They were wanting a little bit more of the pie, too. Is there more money for teachers in education?
Well, you know, what we do is appropriate the money to the school corporations, and the school corporations, through collective bargaining, need to decide how they want to fund their teachers. Our goal is to continue to give money. We are studying teacher wages. COVID did throw that committee, summer study committee, off track a little bit, but we should be having some of that data hit here soon, hopefully in time for the budget. But it is, I will be carrying a bill this session that I'm working with ISTA on to give some bargaining rights back to teachers. And then also in that bill, there are some funds that schools cannot use for collective bargaining. We're going to remove those restrictions, and that should actually put $1.4 billion available for collective bargaining for teacher salaries.
Okay. And when we talk about the e-learning, obviously getting the equipment is one thing, but getting access to what makes it all work, because nowadays we've got an awful lot of doorstops that are known as computers, and that's what they are. They're doorstops unless they have internet access. And you know, in this area of Vigo County, we have certain areas that have really fast broadband, and we have other portions of the county where you can barely get a phone line. So, you know, how is the state going to step in and kind of help with that broadband access for the kids that really need it?
Yeah, so we've been putting hundreds of millions of dollars into rural broadband the past couple of years. We did use some of the CARES Act money to put out what we call GEARS grants. Vigo County Schools got $1.4 million. And then what they did was they partnered with the city of Terre Haute, Vigo County, and they are going to put together about a $4 million package to go out and put broadband into public places. So our public volunteer fire departments that are in rural communities will get fiber to those firehouses, and then they'll put out a signal from there. So we are trying to find creative ways, and it's only going to be through collaboration that we solve some of this. You know, in some school districts here in Clay County, you know, they've opened the school internet to cover the parking lot so kids can come there and study. It's not convenient, but it's kind of the first step in trying to get broadband at faster speeds to residential communities.
And I know it's not your area, your district, but there are other portions of the state that are probably worse off than we are.
Oh, no doubt about it. I mean, we have some very, if you go up to Park County, there you're lucky to get a cell signal in some of those areas.
Yeah.
So there's definitely a need for rural broadband.
When we talk about that too, obviously this is going to take a while. It's not anything, people are going to expect you to walk in, flip a switch, and all of a sudden magically it works. And we're probably still looking, a couple of years down the road before it's really all put together.
Yeah, no doubt about it. It's going to take time. And I think COVID really exposed, you know, our weaknesses in terms of broadband. Because now with education, lots of kids sitting at home that aren't being able to get online to learn. Also businesses, right? Businesses have sent people home. And some people in their homes aren't getting the speeds they need to run Zoom or Microsoft Teams.
And that's something very important for the state economy, because even though some big corporations might want to move to like a Fishers or someplace else in Hancock County or some of those places in the donut around the Capitol, they've got great internet up there. But for us to attract some of that business here for our workers, we need to provide some of the services that they have in those big areas. And we've got to do that here.
No doubt about it. It's probably one of the number one economic development items that we need to solve, because especially right now we're seeing a lot of migration out of large cities into more rural or medium-sized communities like ours. And I think, you know, broadband should be the number one thing that our local elected officials think about daily.
One of the driving forces behind that might be the pandemic, because obviously Indianapolis and the areas surrounding Indianapolis is one of the big hotspots for COVID this year. And so if they want to move out a little bit, well, we're just down the road.
Yeah, that's
come
right.
Come on this way. But we've got to make sure that we can supply what they need when they get here.
Yeah, that's right. And I think areas like ours, you know, areas like Raccoon Lake, I think are attracting, you know, people from the Indianapolis area that are moving out and can work from their home, but they have to have the internet speeds.
Talk about redistricting. This is a redistricting year, and obviously everybody's got an opinion on how it ought to be done. So how's this going to work this year?
Yeah, so we do this every 10 years. You know, a lot of it is driven by population. So I think we can safely assume the Lake County, the areas down by Louisville, and the northern donut counties, are their districts are going to shrink. Ours will probably get bigger, you know, just from a population standpoint. But what we'll do is we'll have a number of public meetings, and we'll take input from various groups, and we'll come together with a bill and then pass it through both chambers, and that's how it would work.
And this is going to have to be done by when?
This will have to be done by the end of session, so mid-April.
So you guys have a lot of work to do in a very short amount of time.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. This will be my first time as a legislator dealing with redistricting.
Talk to you now. Obviously, the pandemic has caused problems for a lot of folks around the state. Is there anything that the state legislature can do to make Indiana better prepared to deal with pandemics or other big health crises like this? I mean, where did we fall short and where can we get better quicker?
You know, aside from broadband, I think, you know, you'll see a lot of studies on our healthcare system. Telehealth is something that we're going to study. You know, we've put some changes in executive orders to allow more telehealth and reimbursement for telehealth. We're going to have to decide if that's, we need to make those permanent or not. But there'll be a lot of studying of our healthcare system. I think one area that I've heard a lot of my colleagues talk about are our health departments and our, by, you know, in our county health departments, our county emergency services. You know, I think we're going to take a deep dive and see if we really are set up to be successful in those areas.
And is part of that trying to determine who has the power to do what? Because there's obviously some state legislators that were questioning the governor and what his executive orders could or couldn't do. And there's been some battles around the state as to what some health departments can and can't do, what they can and can't order. Is there going to be a push to maybe try to better define what's really possible?
There's no doubt about it. There will be some bills that really will define, you know, when, how long a governor can keep us in a state of emergency. You know, we're approaching 8 months, I believe, under state of emergency. A lot of my colleagues would like us to come in and vote to keep us in the state of emergency. You know, I think the governor's done the best that he can do. I'm a little uncomfortable about us, you know, being in a state of emergency for so long without the General Assembly coming in to vote. But I think the governor and his staff are doing the best that they can do.
Do you think that needs to be changed and lined out to where there's a limit as to how far he can go before he has to call you and your colleagues back in?
Yeah, I think, you know, in my mind, I'd like to see a 60 or 90 day period that he would have to bring us in and have a vote on it.
And you'd have to do that, what, for every 90 days, maybe?
Yeah, I would say every 90 days, you know, he would have to do it.
That's okay. Talk to, we were mentioning education. Are you comfortable now with how the state education system is set up? We now have the superintendent of education for the state appointed by the governor instead of elected. That was a big change that just went into effect this year. So good thing?
Yeah, I think it's a good thing. I think, you know, the governor is held to a high standard when it comes to public education. So I think him having a say of who he gets to pick and put into that spot is an important thing to move the agenda forward.
And one last thing before we run out of time, and that is, it's not, they're not building yet, but the casino is coming to Vigo County.
Yeah, it's coming. And
yeah, that was a big heavy lift for you. You were one of the big pushers behind that.
Yeah, it's coming, and I think it will provide a lot of good revenue for us, you know, to help move the community forward.
And do you think that's really going to attract, because everybody's saying, oh, casino's great, but that's not good high-paying jobs. But is that really the next thing that's going to come once we get that open? Do you think that'll really help attract more jobs and other industry into the area?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think a casino is a silver bullet and is going to save our region, but I think what it does do is give us some extra tax revenue that we can use to go out and attract businesses into our community that'll bring those jobs. And I do think, you know, the casino win that we got was seen across the country. So there's been businesses that have reached out to our region because they saw the success that we had. They've seen the success with the convention center, the redo of the Holman Center, getting the VA clinic was a big thing. A $40 million VA clinic was a pretty big deal for us to get. And, you know, that moved us into a competitive spot for the F-35 projects. So we are getting projects, and all of these things bring attention in a positive way to our region.
And do you think now that maybe, because I've heard other people say this before, you know, does Indianapolis ever look west? I mean, we're right down the road. So do you think now maybe they're paying a little bit more attention to us? Because obviously Evansville, Fort Wayne, Purdue's in Lafayette, so they get some attention. Head down toward Louisville, that even though that's in Kentucky, but we're right up against them. They seem to get a lot of attention, and little old Terre Haute just kind of set over here, and not so much. But now they're kind of paying attention to us.
Yeah, I think, you know, they're paying attention to this whole West Central region right now because I think they see a lot of positive energy. We're advocating for ourselves at the State House. We're making a statement that we're open, we're collaborative, and we want to move forward. So I think we are getting more attention, especially when you look at grant dollars and community crossings grants just came out. And, you know, this region got $4.6 million to work on local roads. And those were grants. And a few years ago, we weren't applying for grants.
So now maybe they're paying attention to us and they're saying, hey, look what's over there. It's underdeveloped.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. I think Fort Wayne is watching us. I think Evansville is watching us because
we're competition to them.
Right, exactly. And we're going to compete for those jobs that they're going after. I think this F-35 project was a project that the Fort Wayne region went after, but we rose to the top. And we're in the top five for that. And that's, you know, over 300 communities across the country applied for that. And if we could get that here, that's $1 billion in extra revenue a year to our region.
And in case folks don't remember, at one time, the Racers, the F-16s with the Indiana Air Guard that are now in Fort Wayne, they used to be here.
Yeah, that's right. And that's, you know, that's what gives us a little advantage because one of the things they're looking for, a community that's okay with the noise of airplanes. Well, what I've heard through all of this are a lot of people want to hear the noise again. They equate that to with prosperity in the good old days of Terre Haute when we had those airplanes taken off and Larry Bird shooting baskets in the Holman Center.
And it was fun to kind of hear that thunder and that boom when those F-16s took off. Those things really roared.
Yeah, and so, you know, one of the tag unofficial tagline of our brief where we were trying to go to the Department of Defense was bring the noise. And, you know, they got a chuckle out of that because a lot of communities they try to move airplanes to, they don't want the noise. And we were up front and saying, we're okay with the noise, bring it here.
We know what it is. We've had it before. It can come back. And we know what kind of economic boom. It's not just a sound of a jet boom. It's economic boom too.
Yeah, it's you know, dollars, you know, great paying jobs, and these would be almost 400 active duty positions at good salaries and would live in our community.
Indiana State Senator John Ford, thanks for being with us today. If you missed any part of today's program, want to hear it again, we've got it for you right now on our website. It's there as a podcast. You can stream it or download it anytime you'd like. We'll see you next weekend.
You've been listening to Focus on the Community, a weekly public affairs program that focuses on issues and events in our community. To be considered as a guest on Focus on the Community, contact us by calling 812-420-2518. Be sure and tune in again next week at this time as we focus on the community.